This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of April 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 25th of April 2013, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcements this week. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 26th of April, the sun rose at about 10 to 6 in the morning and will set at 20 past 8 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, which is the 1st of May, sunrise will be at 20 to 6 in the morning and sunset will be nearly half past 8 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle this week are Child Sex Abuse Probe Reopened by Police, Bedroom Tax Raising Questions, and Let's All Make the Most of the Hat Fair. So we'll start off with the story behind the first headline.
Child sex abuse probe reopened by police. Police have reopened a major investigation into allegations of child abuse dating back to the 1960s at a former Winchester children's home. The probe will cover alleged attacks on boys, including beatings and rapes, over two decades at the former county-run Winton House in Andover Road. It was triggered by more victims coming forward after the Hampshire Chronicle revealed 6 months ago 11 former pupils had launched abuse compensation claims against the County Council. That number has now risen to 23. The men are claiming in total about £1 million, including solicitors' fees. The claimants accuse some male staff of physical and sexual abuse in the 1960s and 1970s. One of the former pupils welcomed the fresh police investigation. "I want him, his alleged abuser, to face justice," he told the Chronicle. "It was a nightmare at that school. I had nowhere to turn to. Every time I ran away, they took me back. This has haunted me for years." 8 alleged victims have contacted the police. Because of the size of the inquiry, it is moving from Winchester CID to the force's major investigation team. Winton House, now demolished, was a Home Office-approved boarding school for boys aged 11 to 16. Former groundsman Michael Park was jailed for 12 months in 2004 for indecently assaulting 3 pupils. The County Council settled out of court with his victims, but it is feared there were many more abusers and victims.
Bedroom tax raising questions. More people are seeking advice about housing following the introduction of the so-called bedroom tax, says the Citizens Advice Bureau. The tax, which came into force on April the 1st, cuts housing benefit for people living in council or social housing with spare bedrooms. Residents with one spare room will see their benefits cut by 14% of the total rent paid per week. Speaking at a meeting last month, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance and administration at the City Council, said it could not defy the government over the tax. But Labour councillor Chris Pines said housing officers were trying to minimise the effects. He said, "Our housing officers have been working overtime and chatting to people about their options, but I don't know if there have been any results yet." The council, like most local authorities, is faced with a government initiative, and this is how we have to go about it. We haven't got any extra money to deal with it, but we've got the workload. Councillor Pines added downsizing homes was a problem because of an already large housing waiting list. He said, "There's no point saying you can move to a more appropriate house if there aren't any to go to. That is an enormous problem for us, as we already have 3,600 people on the waiting list. We may be able to sort out a few people with small homes, but what about everybody else?" Winchester's CAB confirmed it had seen more people on the issue, particularly about rooms for carers, which are supposed to be exempt. Chief Executive Jenny Meadows said, "It's mainly people coming in about the carer side of things. We have one client who is caring for her mother in an informal arrangement and sometimes stays with her if her mother isn't well. It would be fine if she lived with her, but the client has her own social housing, so they are both hit."
Let's all make the most of the Hat Fair. Organisers keen to involve more city businesses at event. Winchester Hat Fair bosses are looking to team up with more city businesses to make sure that everyone benefits from the popular event. Mark Courtis, director of the Theatre Royal, which is managing the event for the first time, said he wants to involve businesses who are, in the past, might have felt left out and suffered through restricted trade during the weekend of events. Tens of thousands of people pack the high street and surrounds every year for the three-day event in July, which boosts restaurant and hotel trade but can put off many shoppers. Mr. Courtis said, "It can be seen as a nuisance for some businesses if they're not benefiting from the thousands of people coming into the city, but I want to find ways of turning that perception around. Once a year, the venerable old lady that is Winchester gets to kick her heels and hitch up her skirt and just go for it, and that's terrific. But one of the things we aim to do this year is to get the whole city behind the Hat Fair." He added, "I'd like to have special hats in the clothes shops and set up a photo wall in a camera shop to encourage people to visit. We are about to start conversations across the city and we know what we want to see. I have a hit list in my head, but there may be businesses who can talk to us about their own ideas." The Hat Fair has already signed up to present a two-woman Irish dance show in Bar 3-1 and is looking for a city hotel to host another play in six rooms of its rooms. The Theatre Royal joined up with the Hat Fair in February, partly to ease financial problems following funding cuts, although both Mr. Courtis and Hat Fair Artistic Director Kate Hazel said the merger was for artistic reasons. The festival receives around £140,000 in Arts Council grants, while its budget is around £90,000, excluding staff costs. Around 98% of the acts are now booked, and Mr. Courtis says he was working on the 2014 Hat Fair as much as the coming one. He said, "I think next year will be the biggest and best Hat Fair. I would not call this a pilot event, as that would be to undersell it, but there is a learning curve and we are always learning. But this will be a brilliant Hat Fair and enormous fun." Miss Hazel added, "The bulk of the entertainment would remain free, in the wake of last week's news that the Winchester Round Table was introducing tickets for the annual fireworks night for the first time." She said, "The core of the festival is about being accessible, seeing acts in the street and around the city. There will be some ticketed events offering an alternative and giving more choice to the audience, but it would go against our principles to make more events ticketed. Mr. Cortes added, there will always be a hat on the ground in Winchester.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Chadwick, David John Chadwick, on the 14th of April, aged 61. Crompton, Reg Crompton, in hospital on the 11th of April, aged 73. Fox, Jennifer Ann Denham Fox, on the 20th of April. Gunn, Alison Margaret Gunn, at home on the 13th of April, aged 72. Lewis, Victor Richard Lewis, on the 18th of April, aged 91. Montgomery, Charlie Montgomery, on the 16th of April, aged 87. Preston, Diana Jane Preston, on the 21st of April, aged 77, at home. Preston, John Seal Preston, on the 18th of April, aged 86. Raymond, Dorothy May Raymond, formerly McEwen, née Tubby, at home on the 15th of April. Soper, John Soper, on the 17th of April, aged 48. And we continue now with the Christian comment.
And this week is written by Canon Rowley Ream, and he entitles it Giving Cheerfully and Carefully. Bank Tube Station at 8:30 a.m. Not a place most people would choose to be at rush hour. The sheer weight of humanity shuffling towards the platform is grimly impressive, and there's a captive audience. Over the loudspeakers comes an appeal for a newly opened hospice for children, the first of its kind in the capital. Volunteers are in the station collecting, they say. Please give generously. This appeal is just one example of the changing face of giving. Charities vie for attention in the marketplace, each of them striving to demonstrate the benefits that it brings and to persuade as many people as possible that they should give a fixed amount to make a real difference. Just £10 or £20 will do it. There are no rules against charities collecting like this, and it's no wonder that many of them are being more aggressive in their attempts to raise money. The background is a reduction in the amount of central grants offered, but an increase in demand for services. They're only doing their best to survive and thrive in order to help others. Giving in response to the loudest or most emotive voice, however, is never the best form of financial planning. It's not best for the charities we support, who need regular income, or for those who are serious about giving, who want to make sure that their money stretches as far as possible. And for those who want to make careful decisions about their giving, charities are better than ever prepared to help. These days, they know only too well that values and results must drive everything they do. If they fail to deliver on either front, they will fail to survive. This means that donors can be as careful in their giving as they are in any other financial outlay. Do you want to protect children struggling to survive their childhood, or perhaps give practical direct support for our current wounded? It really doesn't matter what you choose. The important thing is to choose something and stick with it long enough to appreciate the cause you're supporting and to commit to it so that you can put your heart into it. The London Marathon is another great crowd, but unlike the bank at station, one wearing a smile, so much of the joy of that event comes from the sense that many have found a cause and are prepared to run with it. That should be the way we choose to give, most of the time.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start off now with the first letter.
And this first letter comes from Sue Falconer, who is chairman of Winchester City Penguin Swimming Club, which in the letter is referred to as WCPSC. And it's entitled, "It's Not Ridiculous to Want the Best." Sir B. Taylor suggests Peter Spelman's support for a new sports and leisure centre at Bar End is predictable but lopsided in letters April the 18th. On the contrary, sports clubs representing the people of Winchester and district have given much time and thought to the benefits of a new sports and leisure centre, engaging with many experts and visiting a range of facilities around the country. WCPSC has never proposed an Olympic standard pool. The proposal is for an 8-lane 50-metre pool with variable partitions and depths to allow simultaneous use, for example, school swimming, lessons, public lane swimming, club training, water polo, synchronised swimming and diving. Hundreds of people, particularly children, cannot participate in the sport of their choice because we do not have adequate facilities in the city. B. Taylor thinks it, quotes, ridiculous, quotes, a facility should give people, again, quotes, the impression that they can go for gold at a world level, unquote. Why should people be denied those aspirations? High achievers inspire participation at all levels, improving health and building strong community groups. Clubs not only want to provide for those who wish to go for gold, but for all who participate in sport, for competition, fitness and fun. It is not ridiculous to expect an improvement in our infrastructure to accommodate population growth. It is not ridiculous for our city to have a centre which inspires participation with competition standard facilities for court sports, gymnastics, swimming, athletics, etc. It is ridiculous that people from Winchester have to travel all over the region to train and compete. I agree, a centre should have accommodation for small children and infants, and a place to eat. You'll find all this in the proposal document at www.fitforthefuture.org. A new facility will be visible, accessible, environmentally sound and inspirational. Don't let's squander £4 to £5 million patching up the old leisure centre. Winchester and district deserves more. So writes Sue Falconer, chairman, Winchester City Penguin Swimming Club.
A second letter on the same subject, and this is written by Peter O'Shaughnessy. And it's headed, "Nothing But Hijack by an Athletic Elite." Sir, B. Taylor is right. That's letters April 18th. Call a spade a spade. A building on the outskirts of a town is not a centre. And if its main function is to train potential athletes to win medals honouring their country, it's not a leisure centre, but a gymnasium. This Bar End proposal amounts to a hijack by an athletic elite. River Park is a centre for leisure, within easy walking reach of most people who live here. A place where they can get away from competition and the rat race, exercise and have fun. It is the focal point from which radiate various forms of leisure, including a playground for kids, a stroll across the wide stretches of grassland where one may chance upon a little bridge inviting the visitor to explore that botanical wonderland, Winnell Moors. The impostors and usurpers have a worthy cause. If they get the kind of building they want, I'm happy to suggest a name for the institution at Bar End. The gym out of town, or gym on the rim, but hands off River Park Leisure Centre. It's from Peter O'Shaughnessy, The Broadway, Winchester.
And City Councillor Eileen Berry writes, there's a growing need for allotments in Winchester. Sir, I have been reading with interest what is being said about allotments, especially in Stanmore. It has new management and is under the wing of some very responsible, dedicated people. I sympathise with people being able to keep some grounds, especially those in flats or with small gardens. It gives a sense of alternatives for those interested in growing their own. I say this with a great deal of knowledge, as I have been representing Winchester City Council for allotments, and I do understand what is possible. There is another reason why the powers that be should think twice before taking every piece of land for homes. In building more than one house on land that once occupied one dwelling, there is less land for growing. You can't keep taking land and social amenity areas without giving something back. There is a growing need for allotments. Those who say it doesn't matter, and that housing is more important, don't know what they're talking about. They should visit successful allotments and see the gratification that comes from growing your own. There is an old saying that if you keep telling people it is rubbish, eventually, even though they know it is not, they will begin to believe it is. It's a sort of brainwashing. There is no doubt in my mind there is something fundamentally wrong with trashing an allotment because of its poor soil and giving that as the reason for it not being viable. Of course it's viable. You just have to enrich the ground as you would if you wanted anything to grow. Do we really have to take away another way of life that has been here for centuries, something that people enjoy given the chance? I say leave the allotments alone until you can prove categorically that they are not being used. Eileen Berry, City Councillor, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Following on from that letter, Jean Forster writes about companionship and competition. Sir, regarding David Barber's letter about the benefit of allotments to the community, Chronicle, April the 18th, I would emphasise also benefits to well-being, both physical and mental, through exercise, diet and companionship, and even maybe gentle rivalry which keeps a sparkle in the eye. That's from Jean Forster, Edgar Road, Winchester.
And now a letter from Phil Yates, and it's headed Happy Memories of Alfie's Kitchen. Sir, I endorse Chris Webb's view regarding British Restaurant in Winchester by Leonard Daniels that this painting should be acquired from Southampton Art Gallery. That's from Chronicle, 11th of April. Its permanent home should surely be Winchester Art Gallery. This building was Winchester's first commercial kitchen, opening on December the 4th, 1940, to meet the difficulties of wartime feeding. The scheme was introduced by the Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, who named them British Restaurants. Its nickname was Alfie's Kitchen, obviously named after King Alfred. Customers paid 6 pence, that's in old money, for a two-course lunch, plus an extra tuppence for a dessert. I well remember this kitchen, now the upper level of the Brasserie Blanc restaurant. The whole area was owned by Winchester Cooperative Society, the present restaurant forming the butcher's shop, note the tiles, railings and hooks, which are still there, and furniture store. The kitchen was transformed in the evenings to become the Co-op Youth Club, where we met for dances and rehearsals for the drama group. We had to open all the windows to release the stale odour of cooked food from the daytime lunches. I joined in 1942 and stayed until call-up in 1945, becoming the editor of their newsletter. This is where my interest in theatre began 71 years ago. Happy days. That's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
R.F. Bickley says there's no precedent for diverting this road. Sir, I read the report of the latest meeting of the Barton Farm Forum in the Chronicle, April 4th, with incredulity and concern. Carla Holmes have been pursuing planning applications to develop Barton Farm for many years, and it is reported that the director named in your article has apparently only been thinking about the rerouting of Andover Road for, quote, for some months, unquote. I do not know all the intricacies of the planning system or the procedures necessary, but I am aware from travelling around the UK that many towns, villages and communities have had much time and many millions expended on bypasses, underpasses, bridges and every possible action to divert traffic away from such areas in an attempt to prevent intermingling of traffic, cyclists and pedestrians. I wonder if there is a precedent anywhere where a once Roman and now main road is proposed to be permanently diverted into a highly congested area of housing, shops and public buildings, and presumably many cross and access roads. This intermixture will lead to severe congestion, delays, pollution, and possibly accidents, especially with children walking or cycling to school. A long, hard look and thinking about the proposal for several months is not good evidence of a requirement to divert such a road in the manner suggested, with the resultant serious and permanent consequences. R.F. Bickley, East Woodhay Road, Winchester.
Listed buildings blighted by HGVs, writes R.H.J. Hartley. Sir, read your article, Chronicle April 18th, about delivery vehicles in Bishop's Waltham. As a resident and property owner in St. George's Square, I am at last happy to see this brought into the public domain. I note the comments from the parish council, but this problem has been in existence for several years, and despite continual complaints, nothing is being done. St. George's Square is a conservation area, with mainly listed buildings dating from the 1400s. These are under considerable strain from heavy traffic and buses that not only cause them to vibrate, but cover them in hydrocarbons from their exhausts. When it comes to major repairs, we require listed building consent from Winchester City Council. Problems are ongoing, and this one continues to damage our buildings. It beggars belief, as the cost of the damage is borne by the owners. Wattle and daub lime mortars require constant attention as the vibration and pollution impacts every day. There is a simple solution. The co-op has a fleet of vehicles, and the volumes of material daily delivered could be done using a van, as used by the post office parcel service. They could use the rear access in Houchin Street instead of the High Street. Buses could and should be removed from St. George's Square altogether, thus improving our environment, resulting in happy buildings and happy owners. I think it's fair comment that these transport operators would not accept liability for the damage caused. Therefore, they should leave St. George's Square completely or compensate the owners. R.H.J. Hartley, St. George's Square, Bishop's Waltham.
This letter is from Vanessa Young, and it's headed Royal Hampshire County Hospital Treatment Second to None. Sir, through your columns, may I say a huge thank you to all the staff at Winchester Hospital. aged 54, having never been ill in his life, my husband was diagnosed with bowel cancer. This was a most distressing time for all the family, but right from being told that he may have a tumour to now, the treatment has been first class. The consultant, Mr. Miles, and the specialist nurses, Gemma Hobday and Sarah Carter, were and still are outstanding in the care they give. They were on the end of the phone for any question we had, and trouble, and nothing was too much trouble. From Mr. Miles and his team, the surgical staff, the nurses on Kemp Welsh Ward, the Stormer nurses, and the oncology team, you are all brilliant. A dreadful journey has been made so much more bearable. The NHS is often criticised, but I don't think we would have had a better service if we had paid for it. We will always be indebted to this wonderful team for all they have done over the last few months. That's from Vanessa Young, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Julie Peter says, what really decides how people vote? Sir, when Brian Collin was only a city councillor, he worked full-time, the city council job being done in spare time in the evenings and at weekends. A county councillor covers the area served by 9 city councillors, so it would seem that Brian has just substituted one job for another. It's good to talk to someone who knows all about our local authority services, not just those run by one council. That way, you don't get the irritating problem of, quote, I'd like to help, but it's not my province, unquote. I just think it's good to have a hard-working, energetic person who really gets things done for the area he represents. That's what will really decide how people think when they cast their vote on May the 2nd. Jilly Peter, Coney Green, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
Pip Billington says that demolition goes unpunished. Sir, I am appalled that Bargate Homes has received no more than a slap on the wrist for demolishing a listed house in a conservation area, Chronicle, April 18th. They hid their demolition beneath huge covered scaffolding, and it took concerned neighbours to bring it to the council's attention. Alison Davidson, council conservation officer, says Bargate, quote, should have gone through proper channels, unquote. But there is no suggestion of a fine or that Bargate will be banned from developing in Winchester in the future. This stinks. What it tells Winchester residents is that if you have the financial clout, you can do what you like and flout any of the planning regulations, and the council will do nothing to stop you. Planning laws and local councils are meant to be part of our democratic process of government. Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
Roger Chatterton Newman says, make King Alfred our patron saint. Sir, I was interested to read J.R. Chisholm's suggestion that King Alfred the Great should be canonised, letters April the 18th. Until reforms introduced in 1070 by Archbishop Lanfranc, the king was included in the calendar of the Anglo-Saxon Church, the feast day of Alfred, King and Confessor, being celebrated on October the 23rd. He was removed, together with a host of Saxon saints, including Birnus, Apostle of Wessex, so his restitution is indeed long overdue. Even better, why should he not be our patron saint? After all, St. George probably never existed, while Edward the Confessor, for a time seen as a patron saint, was one of the most inept monarchs in history. That's from Roger Chatterton Newman, Stretton's Copse, Milland, Liphook.
C.J. Booth says that protesters show their better side. Sir, how very considerate and obsequious of the protesters at Baroness Thatcher's funeral. They turned their backs on the cortege. This was eminently more preferable than their unwashed countenances. C.J. Booth, Ladycroft, Oxford.
Sarah Robinson writes about those forgetful Liberal Democrats. Sir, I read Mr. Barton Bridden's letter, Chronicle April the 11th, with amusement. Not only did the Lib Dems forget UKIP at Eastleigh, but they also seem to have forgotten about their scare campaign about Sure Start centres. I do not expect them to tell us Hampshire County Council has closed none of its Sure Starts, whereas Lib Dem-controlled Portsmouth City Council is in the process of closing down a dozen or so. I mention this as I know a lady who was scared to death about the possibility of losing her job, which, of course, has not happened. Sarah Robinson, Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas.
A letter from Paul Westcott, and this is headed, No Need to Drive, Use Park and Ride. Sir, so E. Young, letters April the 18th, couldn't find a parking space at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Well, we all know it's a busy place with limited parking. So, walk. Ask family, friend or neighbour to drop you off. Or use the park and ride. A very good service, every 15 to 20 minutes, and it stops right outside. What could be easier? And it's virtually the same cost as parking. You live so close to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. What are you moaning about? Paul Westcott, High Street, Eastleigh.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago, 1813, Bonaparte has taken command of his army. His reputation and his power at stake, he finds it absolutely necessary to take the field before his preparations can, by possibility, be completed in order to stem the tide of public opinion in Germany, under the influence of which the whole Germanic people would soon be in arms. He left Paris Thursday last and next day passed through Metz on his way to Mayence.
100 years ago, in 1913, an article in the Trafalgar House School Chronicle alludes to the fusion of Trafalgar House and Peter Simmons schools. It says, "For 30 years, efforts have been made to set up a strong secondary public school in Winchester. The modern school lasted a few years and closed. The next, under the aegis of the County Council, was built on the foundation laid by the will, dated 1607, of Peter Simmons, a native of Winchester and mercer of the City of London."
50 years ago was 1963. Representatives of local associations and post office and telephone service officials were at Alresford Post Office on Thursday for the ceremony marking the cessation of calls in the manually operated exchange and the changeover to automatic operation. Postmaster Mr. K.C. Wheeler said the building was built in 1937, but owing to the war, no equipment was installed, and it was a sorting office until 1962. The old exchange catered for about 480 subscribers, but the new equipment serves 900 connections.
25 years ago, 1988. Its yield may not be enough to turn the head of J.R. Ewing, but soon to go into production of up to 2,000 barrels of oil daily is the Stockbridge Oilfield Development. Amoco got the go-ahead this week to upgrade their appraisal sites to full-blown production areas. Their proposals involve drilling up to 59 more wells in the next 9 years, from the four sites at Larkwhistle Farm near South Wanston, Folly Farm, Crawley, Hill Farm, Barton Stacey, and Chilbolton Down.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
And the editorial comment this week, if I can read it, mm-hmm. is entitled Making the Most of the Hat Fair. Moves to find ways for more Winchester businesses to be included and, more importantly, share in the financial success of the annual Hat Fair are to be welcomed. This week, Mark Curtis, the director of the city's Theatre Royal, which has taken over the running of the street festival this year, said he wants to introduce some new ideas for the July weekend extravaganza. Top of his list is to bring on board those businesses which in the past may have felt left out and seen the Hat Fair as an irritation and a barrier to making the money. Tens of thousands of people pack the High Street and surrounds every year for the three-day event, which boosts restaurant, pub and coffee shop trade, but can put off many regular shoppers. Mr. Curtis is proposing innovative ideas, including getting a city hotel to play host to a play within its rooms, or setting up a photo wall in a camera shop to encourage people to visit. What's important is that business owners take up his invitation and suggest their own ideas. A more inclusive Hat Fair can only add to the fun and ensure that everyone can make the most of the biggest street festival of its kind in Europe.
Westminster Diary this week is written by George Hullingbury, who's the MP for the Mearn Valley. The Mick Philpot case has led to a great deal of talk about the so-called benefits culture in this country. Some say that he is a monster created by a corrupted system. Others that he is, at least in some way, a victim of it. My view is that Philpot's actions were his and his alone, and that he should be held to account for them, whatever his background. That said, he lived off the benefit system to the tune of more than £42,000 a year, a system which did nothing to challenge his lifestyle. But this culture of entitlement is now being tackled by the coalition, and I believe it has the broad support of voters. So, what is being changed? Despite what some on the left might let us think, there is nothing compassionate about leaving people to a perpetual life on benefits. It is bad for people's self-esteem, for their sense of empowerment, and it stifles ambition, diminishes self-reliance and infantilises the recipients. The principal problem before the coalition started to tackle this thorny issue was that someone could work for 15 hours and lose very little in benefits. But after those 15 hours, benefits were withdrawn at a rate that could be as high as 19 pence for every extra pound earned. So who would do the extra time when it didn't pay? This problem is now at the heart of what the government seeks to change. To make work, not benefits, pay. The new universal credit is, I firmly believe, a good deal of the answer. It has rolled six benefits into one and will mean an enormous reduction in form filling and, crucially, ensures that every extra hour of work pays. But there is also a stick to this carrot. Those who don't want to work can now see their benefits lost for 3 months. Then 6 months, and finally for 3 years, if they don't play ball and get into work, because this government is committed to dealing with this problem through a series of tough initiatives. The new benefits cap also ensures that no household can have a benefits income over that earned by tax, earned after tax by the average UK family, something that has been seriously resented by many hard-working families I have discussed this issue with. I recognise that it is unlikely that any change in the benefit system would have changed Philpot's nature, but I'm sure that it will become increasingly difficult for the few people who exploit the system the way he did to carry on doing so.
And first person this week is written by George Hayter, and he entitles it The Night Miss T Hung On To Me. It was about 8 years ago that I met Margaret Thatcher at Botley Grange Hotel in Hedge End. The occasion was a Conservative fundraising dinner, and Lady Thatcher was introduced to me at the drinks reception beforehand. I was a Chronicle reporter at the time, and she told me that the local press played a vital role. But when I asked what that vital role was, she changed the subject, and no meaningful reply was forthcoming. By the time of our meeting, illness had reduced the intellect of the former Prime Minister, who was no longer quite the Maggie that had occupied Number 10. Baroness Thatcher is not the only member of her family that I have had dealings with, however. In 1983, I talked to her daughter Carol in a long conversation which was rather too long for comfort. Carol was a journalist with a late-night talk show on LBC Radio in London. I lived in London then, and I was listening to the programme at home. Socialist Bob Hawke had just won the general election in Australia, and Carol urged listeners to phone in with their reaction. After some minutes, this promised vox pop about the vote down under had still not started, and Carol kept urging listeners to pick up the phone. Again and again, she repeated the phone number. I had an opinion about the Oz election, so I thought about ringing in. I knew that Mrs. Thatcher stayed up late, and it crossed my mind that the Prime Minister might have a radio on so that she could hear her daughter's show. I liked the idea of the PM hearing me, so I dialed the number. In no time, I was on air, with Carol asking what I thought of Hawke ousting the right of centre Malcolm Fraser. I expressed concern that Go Ahead Australia might find its economy hampered by the trade unions now that Mr. Hawke was in charge. Carol asked a supplementary question, and I managed to amplify my argument to a modest extent. Then she asked about my view of some aspect of Mr. Hawke's likely approach, but my knowledge of Australian politics was already exhausted. She prompted me again. I don't really know that much about it, I said, embarrassed. I'd made my point, and now I wanted to get off air. It was becoming evident that poor Carol had no other callers waiting. She was hanging on to me like a drowning woman gripping a rope. I think I blurted out, "Sorry, I really don't know." And mercifully, Carol let me go. Since then, I've always been aware that the Iron Lady must have been concerned not only with weighty matters of state, but also with her daughter's precarious broadcasting career. At least, she would have been if she'd heard that programme.
Before we move on to the items of general news interest, the Hampshire Chronicle do this feature in which they ask for your say. And the question asked this week was, should more effort to be made to celebrate St George's Day? Which seems appropriate as we're not long, a couple of days past St George's Day. And also, there was the comment made whether we should in fact commemorate King Alfred rather than St George. Anyway, so the question was, should more effort be made to celebrate St George's Day? Jade Downing, 18, chef of Main Road Littleton, said, I didn't celebrate as I was working all day. I do think more should be done because he is our patron saint. But if people don't want to, they shouldn't have to. We're such a multicultural society that it seems a bit daft that you should have to celebrate it. Claire Donaldson, 29, housewife of work from Worthy Down, said, If I hadn't gone on Twitter, I wouldn't have known about it. It's not in your face like everything else. We had a picnic on Sunday, so you could say that that's how we celebrated. It should be a national holiday. Everyone else has one, so why shouldn't St George be one? Steve Hewlett, 53, painter and decorator of Place Lane, Compton, said, It really should be celebrated. We just don't seem that patriotic, do we? There should be something to mark the day with English food. You see those huge parades for St Patrick's Day in New York, but we don't seem to get involved too much. And Sheila Quartley, 76, retired teacher of Oliver's Battery, said, I respect that it's a national day and it should be celebrated, but as a Scot, I'd sooner mock St Andrew's Day. St George's Day has become recently more popular, though. We're celebrating it with friends tonight by going out to dinner.
And those of you who listened to last week's recording will know that Steve Brine MP was a guest reader in this studio reading extracts from the Chronicle. And so, surprise, surprise, what have we got here? We've got a little article about the fact that he did that and a photograph of the readers and the presenter from last week clustering around him as he's in front of a microphone. I'll read you the article first and then a suggested alternative caption, which was given to me a little while ago by the editors of this edition. The article is called Steve Reads the News. Steve Brine, Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, is more used to making the news than reading it. But last Friday he was a guest reader on Winchester Talking Newspaper that helps keep blind people abreast with local news. At WTN Studio in Chesil Street, he took part in the weekly reading and recording of extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. Afterwards, he said, "It was such an honour to be asked to join the team. We had a great time making this edition for listeners. I am committed to working with WTN to help them grow the facility and, as importantly, the number of listeners." And as I say, there's a photograph beneath which the editors have suggested that we could have as the caption, "Would you buy a used car from any of these people?" Which we think is terribly rude.
So, on to items of more general news. The first one is headed, "Shoppers' Credit Cards Stolen in Conn." Police have warned shoppers to be aware after a theft near a Winchester supermarket. The incident happened last Saturday morning when the victim was distracted by a woman as she left Waitrose on Stockbridge Road. As she walked towards her car, she was stopped and asked for directions. Whilst giving them, another person took credit cards from her handbag as it lay on the seat of her car. Officers are now appealing for information following the incident, which happened at about 11 a.m. Inspector Paul Markham said, "I would urge shoppers to be vigilant and to be aware of these types of offences. If you're approached by someone you don't know, make sure you keep valuable belongings with you and safe at all times. If you witness anything suspicious or know who may be responsible for this incident, please contact the police immediately." The woman who distracted the victim is described as white, Eastern European, with dark brown hair and about 40 years old. She is of slim build, 5'6" tall, and was smartly dressed in a black cape and a black felt hat. A similar incident took place in Alton on April the 17th, also at Waitrose, and police are looking into whether the two incidents are connected.
Opposition remains to Stanmore plans. Opposition over regeneration plans for a Winchester estate shows no sign of letting up. Residents got another chance to examine ambitious proposals for Stanmore at a public display last Thursday. About 50 local people passed through Stanmore Primary School to view information panels on display. Concerns ranged from parking problems and student housing to those who feared for the future of their homes. Last week, Winchester City Council leader Keith Wood pledged that no homes would be knocked down without the consent of tenants or owners. No council house will be demolished without the agreement of the occupiers, and in the case of privately owned houses, there is no question of the council using compulsory purchase orders, he said. But Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, said, "The way it has been handled has been an unmitigated disaster. I think we should offer an apology. Part of the problem was that local councillor Jamie Scott has not been at the public consultation because of his hip replacement." Mark Smith, 39, unemployed, of Chatham Road, said, "I think they should scrap all these plans. They should also look at getting the students out to make it what it used to be, a nice, quiet area. Alistair Bilsden, 43, a manager of Stanmore Lane, said, "I'm not impressed. I've just looked at the plans, and there seems to be something built where my house used to be. I've been living 11 years, and my partner's been there 15 years, and have done work on the house. We're also concerned that all our neighbours are students, and they can't see anything in these plans that's going to change that. Kerri-Ann Goddard, aged 27, a full-time mum of Chatham Road, said, "I don't want the youth centre to be moved, and that's more or less the opinion of the people I talk to as well. It's just not going to be safe for kids if they move to the main road." Hugh Watson, aged 81, retired, of St Giles Hill, said, "Looking at these plans, I already think there is a clash of interests here. I'm concerned about what might happen to my allotment. I spent hours and hours of hard work on it." Kerry Fletcher Wildigo, 42, landlord of St Cross, said, "I understand there will be a lot of unhappy people. People want change, but not on their doorstep. And I didn't know anything about this display until I read it in the Chronicle."
Firefighters battle another thatch blaze. It is the sixth thatched roof blaze Hampshire fire crews have fought in just 3 weeks. Almost 100 firefighters were called as ferocious flames engulfed the thatch roof of a family cottage in Durley near Bishop's Waltham last Friday. Those inside fled to safety and could only watch helplessly as flames tore through the roof of their family home and white smoke billowed high into the sky. Surrounding roads were blocked off and crews from all the emergency services descended on Siviers Lane just after 11 a.m. as they all battled all day to save the cottage. It quickly became clear that its rural location, surrounded only by fields, meant that water supply was going to be an issue, but firefighters soon established a shuttle of water carriers to ensure the hoses didn't run dry. A total of 94 firefighters from across Hampshire headed to the scene, with teams climbing up onto the roof, raking off thatch to create a firebreak. But whilst the battle to save the roof proved futile, tireless work of firefighters saw all the household belongings salvaged from inside the home and carried out to safety, to the relief of the married homeowners watching on. Incident commander Andy Bowers said, "Excellent work by our firefighters has seen the belongings salvaged from inside the house. It has been a whole hive of activity, and I would like to give the crews my thanks for the work they have put in." This is the latest in a spate of thatched roof fires that has plagued Hampshire's firefighters over the past 3 weeks. The first three came on Good Friday, when flames ripped through homes in Dibden, Warewell, near Andover, and two 300-year-old cottages in East Meon. A week later, on April the 4th, more than 70 firefighters tackled another in Chalderton Road, Quarley. And then 3 days later, crews were once again called into action after a fire in Vernham Dean Road, Upton. An investigation into all the fires by the fire service revealed that they all had wood burners installed, which could have caused excessive heat being transferred through the chimney or the chimney liner to the thatch. Mr. Bowers added, "Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service would like to urge owners of thatched properties to check and maintain the safety of their chimneys to try and minimise events. The majority of fires at thatched properties are started by sparks or heat transfer. It is crucially important that chimneys and flues are checked regularly by verified professionals. This will hopefully help in reducing these sorts of incidents." Thatch information packs produced by Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service are being distributed and provide homeowners with checklists to minimise the impact of a fire of this type may have. For more information, you can call 07918 887 999. I'll read that again. 07918 887 999.
Villagers at loggerheads with South Downs National Park Authority over new homes. Residents in a Meon Valley village are furious that the South Downs National Park Authority, the SDNPA, has withdrawn its objection to a new housing development. Developers plan 10 homes in Droxford on land at North End Lane within the park and conservation area. But villagers say the development will be too dense and out of keeping with the area and several Grade 2 listed Georgian houses close to the site. They favour a development of 4 properties or less. Robin Aspel of the Malt House said the SDNPA do not seem to care. If they're custodians of our national park, then God help us. I thought their job was one of protection. Why aren't the South Downs people helping to protect us? There have been 5 applications in all dating back to 2009. A total of 53 letters of objection have been sent to Winchester City Council, which is acting as an agent for the SDNPA. Droxford Parish Council is also strongly opposed to the application from Keeble Homes. Its concerns including traffic, sewerage and overdevelopment. A spokesman for the SDNPA said previous applications submitted for this site have been refused by the SDNPA because of their perceived impact on the national park's landscapes and failure to include affordable housing or make any contribution toward transport facilities. The developers have now resubmitted their application to include a contribution towards the affordable housing off-site and transport facilities. This application will come to the SBNPA Planning Committee in due course and they will take the Planning Inspectorate's appeal decision into account when making their decision. The application will now go before the City's Planning Committee at a date to be confirmed.
Crime down by 15% in Hampshire. Hampshire police say there is no room for complacency, despite posting a 15% reduction in crime. Last year, almost 20,000 fewer crimes were reported across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight compared with the previous year's figures. Burglaries, robberies, and vehicle crime saw the most dramatic drop, with a fall of 22%. From 15,589 in 2011-12 to 12,180 in 2012-13. Serious violent crime was also down by 21%, from 803 offences to 631. It means, for the sixth year in a row, crime has fallen, while detection rates have remained the same. The county's top policeman described the year's figures as great progress and praised his staff for rolling up their sleeves against a backdrop of severe budget cuts and wider economic hardships. Chief Constable Andy Marsh said, "We can only do what we do with the help of the public. Where communities thrive, crime is certainly forced out. We want to make the force area hostile places for criminals, and will continue to do that. There is no room for complacency." Dr. Craig Webber, senior lecturer in criminology at the University of Southampton, said the figures highlighted the misconception that in times of austerity, crime rises. He said, "It could be that when people are poorer, there is simply nothing much worth taking. Also, goods are that much cheaper, so any criminal has to weigh up whether it is worth carrying out a robbery or a burglary for something that actually isn't worth all that much to buy in a supermarket. The public is also getting more safety conscious with better locks and security systems. There are more cameras around, but their exact benefit is still a matter of debate." He did sound a cautionary note that crime may rise in response to the recent benefit reforms. He said, "We may well see a blip in crime as the full impact of the recent benefit changes is felt."
Store backs down over drinks license. Sainsbury's rethink after protests. Residents in Bishop's Waltham have successfully seen off plans by Sainsbury's to sell alcohol at its proposed petrol station. The firm had applied for a licence, but the application was withdrawn before a City Council licensing committee. Sainsbury has taken over the petrol station on Winchester Road, close to its planned superstore at Abbey Mill, and sought permission to sell alcohol from 6 a.m. to midnight every day. Local people were unhappy about the opening hours and that the forecourt shop would sell alcohol, unlike the previous petrol station, which also shut at 10 p.m. The parish council opposed the proposal because it would encourage public nuisance and crime and disorder, although in its application, Sainsbury said it would install CCTV and put up signs asking customers to leave quietly. Councillor Robert Shields said, "It's actually quite difficult to oppose a licence because you can't make the case that this place can't have a licence because of potential noise or whatever, but then the place up the road can. On the face of it, though, this does seem like a small victory." A spokesman for Sainsbury's said, "We have decided to withdraw the licensing application to sell alcohol from our new petrol station in Bishop's Waltham and do not intend to resubmit the application at this time. Whilst this would be a valuable service for our customers, we understand there were concerns regarding the sale of alcohol from the petrol station."
Fashion Week composer chases her dream. Sitting in cinemas across the country, people are looking up at the silver screen and dreaming of being the next Brad Pitt, Anne Hathaway or Steven Spielberg. But not Hampshire woman Livia Thomas, who aspires to create the more subtle part of the cinematic experience, the music. At just 23 years old, Olivia has written music for two BBC radio series and scored accreditation to this year's Cannes Film Music. She is chasing her dream of being a film and TV composer, but is happy to make several stops along the way, writing music for Winchester Fashion Week, weddings and council promotion films. A former Peter Simmons student, Olivia focused on singing up to university, where she studied classical singing at Leeds. But it was an MA course at Bristol for television and film composing that she found her calling. She got a break last year when a family friend asked her to compose music for BBC Radio 4 series An Everyday Story of Afghan Folk, where she can currently be heard as series 2 of the programme started last week.
Safer crossings at last for school pupils. Winchester pupils are celebrating after their journeys to school were made safer by a new pedestrian crossing. The crossing has been installed near Osborne Special School in Andover Road, one of the busiest routes in and out of the city. It was completed last month and cost around £100,000, funded by Hampshire County Council. The school has been campaigning for a crossing for more than 5 years, and head teacher Sonia O'Donnell said she was delighted to see it finally. She said, "I'm over the moon. When I first started 5 years ago, this was the first thing students talked to me about. This is fantastic for the pupils and will develop their independence and allow them to access the community in a safer way." Students enlisted the help of Winchester MP Steve Brine in the campaign after meeting him in Parliament last year. Mr. Brine said, "The staff and pupils from Osborne School have been absolutely brilliant in their campaign to get this crossing, even coming to Westminster last year to seek my help, which I was happy to give. It's been a long time coming, too long in my opinion, but it's a huge relief to us all to see this safe crossing now installed." Brian Collin, Ward County Councillor, added, "I'm delighted that this crossing has now been built. It's not only a help to pupils at Osborne School, but also gets used by Peter Simmons students and residents going into town." And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph showing a group of the students by the crossing, Two of them in wheelchairs with their carers, and the rest of them all smiling happily and giving the thumbs up sign, as is Steve Bryan, MP.
High Street Fashion on the Catwalk. The finale of Winchester Fashion Week ended with two sell-out shows at the Guildhall. The city's dedicated followers of fashion packed into the Battersea Hall last Saturday to be treated to a visual feast comprising modern trends and design classics. It was a change of direction for the annual Fashion Week, as the first two were organised by and featured work from students. This time, professional models showcased collections from more than 20 of the city's retailers, including Gieves & Hawkes, L.K. Bennett, Jack Wills, Jigsaw, Marks & Spencer, Maxim's Hobbs, White Stuff, Truth or Dare, River Island, Anarchy, Jeremy France Jewellers, Pavilion, Monsoon, Number 7 at Boots, Brides of Winchester and Moss Bros. After the first show in the afternoon, Catherine Turness of the Winchester Business Improvement District, who handled marketing and promotion for the show, said visitors came from all over Hampshire with the bonus that the outfits were available to buy on the city's high street. The afternoon show attracted around 160 people, followed by another 250 visitors to the evening event. And there is a photograph here, which I can't resist talking about to you, of what in the old days we would have called four young girls, beautifully attired in some of these dresses, mostly black, above the knee. They've all got dark-coloured leather shoes on, two blondes and two brunettes. And I think that's probably where we'll leave that.
Workshops for dementia carers. Winchester families will be amongst the first in the UK to benefit from free workshops on caring for loved ones with dementia. Home Instead Senior Care has adapted the family-orientated workshops from the City and Guild's accredited dementia training programme. Jan Gapper of Home Instead said, "The workshops will teach people to identify the typical signs of dementia and gain a better understanding of the condition. It will also arm family carers and others in the community with effective techniques for managing the many different and sometimes challenging behaviours associated with dementia." The sessions take place at Badger Farm Community Centre on the 11th of May and the 25th of May from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Attendees must register beforehand, and sessions will operate on a first-come, first-served basis.
Foley Whittingstall Restaurant, a step nearer. Hugh Foley Whittingstall is a step closer to opening a restaurant in Winchester. The City Council has applied to change the use of its Abbey Mill office in Colebrook Street from business to restaurant cafe class. It has also applied to demolish an extension in the service yard southwest of the building and make minor alterations to the building, including the construction of a terrace. The council has signed a lease with the celebrity chef for his River Cottage business to take over the listed building, although several residents have opposed the plans and criticised the business for lack of communication. Anyone who wants to make comments has until May the 8th to contact the council. The application will go to a planning committee later this year.
Artist distraught after theft of life's work. Studio containing prints and pictures taken from field. An artist is devastated after her studio and life's work were stolen from a field near Alsford. Emily Fever, a painter and printmaker, works from a converted shepherd's hut in a field off West End Lane, Medstead, but it was stolen overnight last week. "I just feel like my guts have been torn out," she said. "If nothing is found, I just have to start from scratch. It's just devastating," the 46-year-old added. Emily and her husband, Kim Burden, are currently living in Alton, but the hut was situated on a plot where she and her husband hoped to build a home. She said, "It never occurred to me that it would be stolen. I always thought that if anyone broke in, they would see it was just artwork and leave it." But when she arrived last Tuesday morning, her studio was gone. "It was just absolute disbelief," she said, "disbelief and panic. I was looking to see if it had rolled away, even though I knew that wasn't really possible. I cried later, but at first I was just numb," she said. She says the hut is worth around £5,000 to £6,000, but the artwork within, much of it dating back 10 years or more, is harder to value. "The work is absolutely priceless to me. If I had to start adding it up, it would be about £4,000 worth, and quite possibly more," she said. On the morning of the discovery, Mrs. Fever bumped into a man whose trailer had also been stolen, and they contacted police immediately. Mrs. Fever said, "The worst part of it is that they would just take the hut and sell it, and just dump my work." Police are now appealing for witnesses. PC Alistair Charnley said, "This item is very identifiable, and it's likely that the offenders loaded it onto a trailer in order to remove it."
Villagers to decide shop's future. Locals are to have their say over the future of Michellever Village Shop and if it should become a community-owned enterprise. Michellever Parish Council plans to leaflet villagers and ask them if they are interested in raising funds to buy the shop, which is up for sale for £375,000, including an attached house. The issue was briefly discussed at the Parish Assembly last Wednesday, but only about 35 to 40 residents were present, too few to be representative. William Helen, Chairman of Michellever Parish Council, said, "It is for the community to decide if it wants to proceed and how it would get the funds together. Under the localism bill, parish councils have the power to run a shop, but Mr. Helen said parish councillors were volunteers and already worked hard for the local community. Mr. Helen said, "It is not up to the parish council to do it. We would support it, but not be the driving force behind it. I see our role as informing the community and for local people to decide what they want to do. If it goes forward, it will be a community shop and not parish council. Plans to leaflet the village will be discussed at the next parish council meeting on Wednesday, May the 1st. As previously reported, Winchester City Council has added the shop to its recently introduced list of assets of community value. This stopped it being sold for 6 weeks, for example, at auction. During this time, Michellever Parish Council stepped forward to register an interest in buying the store, and the moratorium on a private sale was extended to 6 months. This extra time allows the community to raise money to buy the store. Meanwhile, the shop is still open for business. Since 2008, it has been run by the King family, who have a 5-year lease."
Gurkhas banned to mark Armed Forces Day. They are some of the most feared soldiers in the world, and they are coming to Hampshire to mark Armed Forces Day. The band and pipes and drums of the Brigade of Gurkhas are taking part in a charity concert in the grounds of the island at Great Bridge near Romsey. The 2-hour concert, which includes a fireworks display, is on Saturday, June the 29th, in the grounds of the home of Sarah and Christopher Saunders Davis. All money raised at the concert will go to 2 charities: the Gurkha Welfare Trust, which supports poverty-stricken Gurkhas of the British Crown and dependents, and the Cairn Trust, which helps poor children in the Himalayan foothills of Nepal. The concert is Test Valley's contribution to Armed Forces Day 2013. The event will start at 8 p.m. with a programme of what's described as lively and popular music, and will include classic and modern pieces. There will also be a marching display and Gurkha soldiers will put on a display of Nepali cultural dances, including the famous Kukri dance. Hampshire's Lord Lieutenant, Dame Mary Fagan, is due to attend. Host, Mrs. Saunders Davis, said, "We are looking to raise something in the region of £20,000 for charity. It'll be such a great privilege to have the Gurkhas here. When we picked the day for the concert, we didn't realise it was Armed Forces Day. So people will be coming from all over Britain and overseas too. It'll be fantastic." Romsey's only department store, the Bradbeers, is sponsoring the event programme. Tickets cost £19.50 each before May the 1st and £23.50 thereafter, and are available from the Gurkha Welfare Trust in Salisbury on 01722-323-955. I'll repeat that phone number, 01722-323-955.
Looking for partner in record-breaking attempt. An Alsford cyclist is looking for the perfect partner to help him break a British record. Endurance cyclist Dominic Irvine has set his sights on breaking the man's tandem ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. Mr. Irvine, 45, attempted the 842-mile trip last year with friend Dr. Ian Rodd, a paediatrician at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and although they completed the challenge, they missed out on the record due to bad weather. But he remains convinced the record, set in 1966 at 2 days, 2 hours, 40 minutes and 25 seconds, is breakable. He said, "For me, it's all about thinking differently and challenging existing assumptions about what's possible. For two guys to have the audacity to think they could take on a record and have a chance of breaking it does not make sense, and yet we came dangerously close last year. I'm utterly convinced we could do it, and it doesn't have to be someone who is young or an Olympian." Mr. Irvine, who runs a business training company, said his partner could be male or female and of any age, but he was ideally looking for someone based in Hampshire. His budding teammate should have a willingness to train between 12 and 20 hours a week for the next 10 months. He added, "The three most important things to me in a partner are they are a team player, they have a history of endurance in some sport, and they have a sense of humour. We are going to be on the bike for around 50 hours, not to mention the training, so we have to get on. The attempt should take place in spring 2014, although it depends on the level of experience of his partner. They will also raise money for charity."
Reaching for the sky for Mayor's Charities. Mian Valley schoolchildren have raised more than £1,000 for the Mayor of Winchester's charities. Children at Wickham Primary School released 264 balloons on Monday to raise cash for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital's Magic Wand Appeal, the Felix Fund Bomb Disposal Charity and Bishop Waltham Community Responders. People paid £5 to enter a balloon with their name and address inside, and the balloon which travels the furthest will win that person £100. Mayor Frank Pearson said the event was enjoyed by all the children. He said, "It was great fun and the whole school was out with 250 children enjoying themselves. The wind was blowing the balloons towards Kent, so you never know, one of them could end up in Denmark or Scandinavia." Event organiser and Wickham City Councillor Theresa Evans said she was pleased to continue fundraising events for the Mayor's charities. She said, "I always organise something for the Mayor's charities, and this was something I did before in the year 2000 in Abbey Gardens. But this year we thought it would be something nice for the primary school. It was a unique opportunity for the school, and everybody had lots of fun."
Farmers bid to replace poultry sheds with homes. A farmer looks set to be denied permission to build two arts and crafts studios on land near Alresford. Winchester City Council Planning Committee is today, Thursday, being urged by officers to reject plans by Humphrey Farms to demolish six poultry sheds near Bramdean and replace them with two large houses. Director of Humphrey Farms, Jonathan Humphrey, wants to build a 6- and 7-bedroom house with outbuildings and garages in large grounds in place of the chicken coops on Wolfhanger Farm Woodlands. Planners have said there is no justification to replace the agricultural buildings on the 13.6-acre site with residential ones in an underdeveloped area. They added that it does not fit in with the surrounding area and there is no provision for affordable housing. In a letter of objection, a neighbour, Mark Carpenter, said the site should stay as agricultural and carry on in the production of eggs or poultry to which it is well suited.
Residents' anger over new town homes. Hundreds of residents packed into a public consultation meeting in Stockbridge Town Hall to raise their fears over the proposed development of 46 houses in Longstock. Representatives from David Wilson Homes and GKA Consultancy faced questions from some angry residents who aired numerous concerns with the plans. Issues raised included the visual impact on the countryside, whether there is a need for affordable housing in the area, and an enhanced risk of flooding to Stockbridge High Street. The land proposed for development is currently owned by the Busk Trust, set up by the father of local Tesk Valley Borough Councillor Daniel Busk. Residents flagged up their worries and accused Mr. Busk of failing to declare his interest, but Councillor Busk has quashed these claims. Councillor Busk said, "The land in question is owned by a family trust and is clearly recorded in the Register of Members' Interests. I believe no application has yet been made, and if one is, it will be determined under the Member Officer Code of Conduct. Because of the sensitivity of the matter and my interest in it, I judged it inappropriate to attend the consultation meetings."
Phone lines back. Phone lines have finally been restored after a burst water main left people without them for nearly 3 weeks. The incident flooded BT boxes at the junction of Andover Road and Swan Lane on Easter Sunday, affecting customers in Hairstock Week and Teg Down. Residents were angry at the time it took to fix the problem and were severely and several claimed BT had not kept them informed. But phones were restored last Friday after Winchester MP Steve Bryan contacted the company and urged it to fix the problem. Mr. Bryan got involved after being approached by resident Sir David Lumsden of Wickmark Teg Down. Sir David said, "We are very upset over poor communication. No attempt was made to tell us what happened, and then, when they spoke to us, we were given the wrong information over when it was going to be fixed. We're all elderly and rely on emergency alarm systems which did not work when the phones were down. Someone could have been lying on the floor indefinitely with no way of calling help. I think we're all very grateful to Steve Bryan for getting it fixed." Mr. Bryan said the situation for residents was actually started to get serious, and I have to say I was pretty appalled to hear that they've been disconnected for 3 weeks. I had to do some pretty straight talking with BT, who, to be fair, came through promptly in the end, but it should never have got this far. Around 50 properties in Winchester were affected.
Teen driver banned. An Otterbourne teenager who has been banned from driving after taking a vehicle without consent and crashing into a garden wall near her home. Tabitha McCoy, aged 18, of Coles Mead, Otterbourne, took the Nissan Almera and later smashed into a wall in Cranberry Close on March the 29th, Basingstoke Magistrates Court heard last Tuesday. McCoy pleaded guilty to taking a car without consent, driving otherwise than in accordance with a licence, and with no insurance. Magistrates disqualified her for 12 months, ordered her to pay £700 compensation, a victim surcharge of £60, with £85 costs.
Died due to natural causes. An alcoholic was found dead at his home after the alarm was raised by a neighbour. Paul House, 69, was discovered in Bartholomew Close, Hyde, on December the 17th, after a concerned neighbour alerted a housing assistant, an inquest heard. Jane Hayward, also of Bartholomew Close, said she normally heard Mr. House coming or going from his flat, but had not heard him for some time. The inquest heard that Mr. House, a former journalist, was a severe alcoholic. He was a charming chap. He was gregarious and eloquent, Ms. Hayward said. At the hearing in Winchester last Wednesday, Assistant Deputy Coroner Sarah Wilby returned a verdict of death by natural causes.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.